A Republican congressman from Michigan has accused President Trump of impeachable conduct. But keep in mind, to Republicans, impeachable conduct could mean eating a veggie burger. Gwyneth Paltrow hosted a Goop Health Summit over the weekend. Activities included guided meditation, sound bath, and a how to make poor people hate you workshop. A group of 19 Florida college students were robbed at gunpoint while on an outreach trip in South Africa. Sounds like someone is 19 NASCAR iPhone cases richer. The women's retail chain Dress Barn is closing its remaining stores. Customers are hoping to find a new retailer that literally calls them cows. O.J. Simpson says he's fine with the Buffalo Bills allowing a new player to wear his old number 32. He says he'd just like to send the young player a card if they wouldn't mind giving him his home address. And finally, Walmart announced that it will have to raise prices on its products after the Trump administration adds tariffs on goods imported from China. Walmart customers are now shocked to learn that the $2.99 camouflage tank top with an eagle saluting the flag was not made in America. But we are. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, welcome to the Trump Report, except no substitutes. This is the Trump Report. I'm Christian Black, joined by...
Chelsea Galicia.
And...
Scott Moore.
Tamara Brown, on assignment. I don't know what she's been assigned to, but she's on assignment. A lot of things to talk about, and one of the things that we wanted to spend some time focused on today is sort of the light, airy subject of abortion, because there are these new laws. I was going to say the Georgia one, but actually the Georgia one isn't the newest one. Mm-mm. We now have the one from Alabama.
And Missouri.
And Missouri. Is Missouri since Alabama? I can't even. So there's five states now. So we've got Georgia, Ohio, Mississippi, Kentucky, and now Alabama. And then there are laws that severely restrict access to abortion. I actually don't know the specifics. Apparently Utah's on there too. So let's not leave them out of the party. But, you know, the map that you can see if you're watching on YouTube, courtesy of MSNBC, clearly, is a cluster. It's all together. It's what is that that's not in there? Is that Tennessee?
Yep.
Tennessee's like, yeah, we can't, you know. But obviously, I don't know the specifics of all the laws, but I know that the Alabama one makes no allowances for life of the mother, rape and incest, which usually even your most ardent pro-life advocates usually are willing to, maybe they still don't agree with it, but they understand that they would have that in there. So this law doesn't make that any allowances for that. So, Chelsea, this seems very clear that everybody's wanting, you know, that there are a lot of these states are looking to have the Supreme Court reevaluate Roe v. Wade. I guess they feel like it's, constructed a little bit more in their favor. Let's start with the Alabama law, because that's the one that's been getting a lot of attention in the last week because of the fact that those provisions aren't in there.
Yeah, it's the most restrictive, I believe, of all the new laws. And yes, this is happening now because the Supreme Court has been, in essence, reshaped since the Trump administration got to put in two of its guys, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. And so now the states that have been, you know, long time pro-life, which now I have to use air quotes whenever I use that term, because I can't really say it with a straight face. Like, I really believe that they mean that, but not to go too far off on that tangent. Yeah. So now that they see that this is their opportunity to have the Supreme Court overturn Roe v. Wade. So all of this is a concerted effort to do that, because this has been the same drum that they've been beating on for, you know, since 1973, since the law was decided.
Right, and we'll talk about some of the specifics of the law in a moment. But the thing that really surprises me, it's not any of these states actually passing laws, at least like this. The fact that this one is so restrictive, it's almost like it's asking to not be upheld. It's like if your point is to have your law upheld and in some way challenge Roe v. Wade, I feel like you would not have something in there that, you know, or you would have an exception for that. So that to me was the most surprising part of the story.
Right. The laws are written not to be enforced, but in order to attract the attention, and that the Supreme Court could not choose to not take it. Because remember, a case can make its way all the way up, right up until the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has the right to choose to hear the case or not.
Right.
And so in a case like this that was just so egregiously in defiance of the case law, they won a case that the Supreme Court almost could not deny to take.
So, Scott, as we talk about all of this, just I guess the same question I have for Chelsea. Were you surprised that this law was passed the way that it was, you know, as restrictive as this?
No, because I think it was the same thing. Because, you know, there was some speculation that maybe Governor Ivey wouldn't sign it because she's a woman. But, of course, she's very conservative. That was actually in support of Roy Moore, actually, in running for Senate. But again, going to what Chelsea was saying, the whole point is to try to get it to the Supreme Court. So they're going to go as extreme as they want because they know it's not going to be enforceable. Even if they took out exceptions for rape and incest and other things, they're still it's technically right now unconstitutional, any of these type of bans. So the point is to be as extreme as possible and hopefully get it to the Supreme Court as quickly as possible. But like Chelsea says, there's a good chance they won't. And I'm not even sure, just looking at the tea leaves, if all the conservatives would actually side with overturning this precedence anyway. So I think they're hopeful as far as the pro-life side, but I don't even know if that would actually even happen anyway. So, you know, it's a which we get into more later, but that's the whole point.
What's so interesting about the way that these cases have these laws have been framed is they've been framed to make sure that they get in front of the Supreme mm-hmm. Court.
Right.
But in their haste, they have almost set themselves up for failure. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. They're really trying hard to get in front of the Supreme Court, but because of the lengths to which they went to do that in the way that these laws were written,
right.
They are probably undermining, reducing their own chance.
Yes.
I mean, because they're even giving room for I would see Kavanaugh or Gorsuch to even say, like, whoa, whoa, people, like, this goes way too far. And if Kavanaugh and Gorsuch do what conservatives want them to do, which is just to say yay or nay, strike down a law or not, as opposed to coming up with a framework. Like in Roe v. Wade, they came up with a framework for when is it a woman's right to choose and when is it not, right? This whole balancing act. Well, a more conservative judge doesn't believe that that's their role. They are just supposed to hear this case and say, is that constitutional or not? Yes or no. That one is just no. There's not going to be that same explanation or scale or nuance that Roe v. Wade provided. And these justices are going to as much as some of them, including Thomas in a recent case, tried to say that stare decisis or precedence is not the end-all be-all, these justices, I believe, will be stuck. They'll have to do something so egregious as to, like, defy legal logic.
Right. And I think that also the point you made earlier is that the Supreme Court could decide just not to hear it. Mm-hmm. So obviously you have to go through a series of appellate courts and, I don't know, circuit courts or whatever to even get to that point.
Yeah.
So if they don't hear it, then whatever the highest ruling was that was given is what holds, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So, but the conservatives are banking on the fact that Trump has now appointed 100 federal judges. And I don't know how they're spread out through the country. Scott might know better than I would, but they're hoping that there are enough of them in there that the federal levels will uphold these laws and therefore make it impossible for the Supreme Court not to take it up.
And we did reference that the law was ultimately signed by the female governor of Alabama, but a graphic that's making a lot of the rounds are the people who voted for the law to reach the governor's desk, and that's a very diverse group of Alabamans for those watching on YouTube. Some people are bald, some people have dark hair, some people have lighter hair.
Different color ties.
Although, you know what, mostly shirts, red ties and all.
One guy is out in nature.
Yeah.
His photo. Yes.
Yeah, that's true. But all white guys. And obviously it's all guys is really the key.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah. And I think that that's, look, ardent, diehard conservatives, you know, their beliefs on abortion are definitely strongly informed by religion, and they have these long held beliefs. I think other people, it's a lot more like, this is what I feel, but I'm not making decisions for women that I don't know. You know, they're like, this, you know, if it was my life, my situation, this is how I would feel, but I can't tell someone else what to do. Even conservatives, it's like, you know, and their thinking is, look, you're gonna answer to God at some point, right, if what you've done is wrong. But I'm not gonna tell you not to do it, even though I think it's wrong. I think you find that a lot more common than some of what we've been hearing the last week or so.
Very interesting that I last week reread Roe v. Wade just so that I would be a little bit more refreshed, right, on the legal logic behind it. And one of the topics that they covered was, how far back does this idea of abortion and religion actually go?
Right.
And the court said not very far, that this is not in, hasn't always been the religious doctrine until recent times.
Right.
So the Supreme Court doesn't actually, you know, in 1973, didn't see it as really tied in with religion. It was more a ideology introduced by the church as distinct from the religion itself.
Well, and I think there's a couple sides to it. It was sort of always kept more private, you know, back earlier, and women were having it done, and you weren't really tracking, just like gays and transgender people, you know, people were not really at the surface. So it wasn't something that was really regularly talked about until, you know, 60, 70 years ago, as far as a practice, because it was more of a private thing. And then once it started to become more of an issue in the light and with modern medicine and people being able to track it more, it became a bigger thing. But to that point, yes, it was never this wedge issue that it became later on. And now that it's back to being again, I mean, it's never really gone away, but now, as we've seen, because of the Supreme Court makeup changing, we've seen this aggressive move in the, you know, banning of abortions, which, two fronts of that is, one, I don't think it's going to do very well in the courts, but I also don't think it's going to do well in the court of public opinion either, because I think there's going to be a lot of even Republican women that are going to be very turned off by these extreme bans. And I think in a lot of ways this is going to backfire for Republicans and conservatives, yeah, that are running next year, politically, as mm-hmm. well as in the courts.
I think if anything, it motivated women mm-hmm. in these states mm-hmm. to get involved in politics and to run. And I frankly think that that's a good thing.
Yeah,
I mean, let's talk about the political ramifications of it for a moment. And I think it's one of those things. And it's, look, it's not like the White House has actively taken this on, but it is sort of, you know, the edict of this administration, and these governors and state lawmakers feel like this is a White House that's receptive to this issue. I know that this panel might disagree, but things are going fairly well for President Trump popularity-wise right now. When you stir up a hornet's nest on an issue like this, all of a sudden people are really focused on one issue. And their one issue is something that, despite all the things that Donald Trump said about abortion when he wasn't running for president, he has come out, you know, against it now. And I believe he actually attended one of the, whatever that event is that they have on the Mall in Washington. I think George W. Bush had called in, but Trump was, I think, the first president to actually attend it. So he's very receptive to these ideas. So if you get attached to that, I think all of a sudden you have people that are much more motivated. Now, granted, Election Day is more than a year away, but I do think that look, a lot of people don't vote just in general. You know, I can only imagine if a fraction of the people who never vote were to vote in our elections, like 10% of those people who never vote, like what the, you know, what the turnout would suddenly become. Because I don't know, Scott, is the turnout's like, it's like a little bit more than half, or it's around half for a presidential election? Yeah. We're not talking about, you know, local elections, state elections, any, you know, the runoff elections, any of that stuff. For a presidential election, it's about half. I think that's so if that other half, you just get a fraction of them to come mm-hmm. out, and this is the issue that motivated them, I think that, you know, that's something that will certainly not work in President Trump's favor.
Right. And I will take a step back by saying I don't agree that he's very popular. He's maybe the most popular he's ever been.
That's what I mean. He's as popular as he's been.
It's still well below 50%.
Sure.
And it doesn't take much. He's never been able to get too much higher. And that's the thing is you would think he would be much higher because of the state of the economy and everything else going on. But he cannot help himself by continuing to get involved in issues and things that are unpopular. And I think this is something that's not only would be affecting him, but you have to think about all the other races for the Senate and things that are going to be happening next year as well that might be hinging on this type of stuff and how people are feeling that they're supporting or against these bans. And I think that's going to play a big role because you think about, you know, Susan Collins running again in Maine next year, and you think about Doug Jones that's going to be running again for the Senate seat in Alabama next year. And you think about some of the things that are going to be very important for Democrats as well for taking back the Senate and how that's going to play out next year beyond the presidential level. So if I were Republicans, I'd be very concerned that it could backfire on them. I mean, clearly, obviously, in places like the Deep South and Alabama and Missouri and everything, I don't think, you know, they're going to be worried that all of a sudden the state's not going to go for a Republican presidential candidate. But when you have people that are running on some of those below the top ticket there, it could make the difference.
Yeah, of the states we saw on the map, I think Ohio is the one that you feel like they could certainly vote for Democrats. But the other ones, what was it? It was Alabama, Missouri, Georgia, mm-hmm. Kentucky.
Georgia's close.
Arkansas. Yeah, Georgia.
And even Kentucky, both Mitch McConnell, not that I think they'll lose, but both Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin, who's actually in the primary today for governor for re-election in Kentucky, both incredibly unpopular. So, you know, not to say that either one of them are particularly safe. Again, it's Kentucky's a Republican state.
Oh, my God.
But Kentucky's had Democratic governors and everything. They're much like Louisiana. You have a Democratic governor right now. You know, you do. They will vote for Democrats. And, yeah, so neither one of them. I think Mitch McConnell's approval rating in Kentucky is like 18%. I mean,
wow.
it's really bad, yeah.
Holy moly.
And Matt Bevin's pretty bad.
Or next year be the year that he's taken out? Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I would be more excited if McConnell was out or Trump was out. That would be a hard...
Yeah, I mean, I think you want the McConnell out as the chaser. I think that's what you're looking for. We referenced it quickly. I did want to take just a minute or two. What did the decision Roe versus Wade, what precedent did that put on the books? What did that turn into law? I mean, we've all heard about before Roe v. Wade, people still got abortions. I mean, the term back alley abortion is because of just the conditions that they would be performed under. And once you have this federal standard, that definitely changed sort of, you know, when and where you could get them. But what exactly does the court case say, Chelsea?
So there are these three main ideas or rights that this case relies on. First of all, that there is a degree of medical privacy. There is no amendment that says your medical information, your medical decisions are yours to be made on your own in private. That is not there in any letter of the law in the Constitution. But judges have long inferred that there are rights to privacy beyond the Fourth Amendment right to privacy, where, you know, against illegal search and seizure, in different amendments, 9th and 14th, that privacy is kind of baked in there. All right, so, I mean, imagine you didn't have a right to medical privacy. Then maybe your employer would start asking for your medical records before they agreed to hire you to make sure that you are healthy and fit to their standards. I mean, could you imagine what it would be like if we had no right to medical privacy? So that would be one thing that would have to be upended, I'd say, if Roe were to be reversed, because that was one of the fundamental rights. Actually, I should be very careful with that that term, fundamental rights, because that has a big consequence to that. But it is a right that the Supreme Court has identified and upheld repeatedly. The second is a woman's own kind of interest in her own dominion and control over her own life and her own body. The Supreme Court recognized that, yes, a woman does have that. A woman doesn't have that to the degree that some people who chant "my body, my choice" would like. The Supreme Court specifically said that a woman's right of control and dominion over her own body has limitations. So I think that if you are on the left and you are chanting "my choice" or you're chanting "my body, my choice," you're not helping us because you're saying something that the Supreme Court in Roe specifically disagreed with. And then the third right is the right of the state to protect life. And those are the three sort of interests that are at play that this Roe court figured out this standard upon which, under what circumstances is it okay for a woman to abort and under which circumstances it is not. So basically it came up with like a timeline of when is the mother's interest most compelling and when is the state's interest in protecting life more compelling. And so it was this three-prong approach based on the length of the pregnancy.
Right. And obviously in recent years, we've heard the term, I didn't mean to use the term, but the terminology, late-term abortions. And we have President Trump and other people talking about a procedure where babies are born alive. And then I'm just paraphrasing what President Trump said. I would have the direct quote if I had it in front of me. But it was basically the idea that the baby can be born alive and then you decide what you want to do with it. And as far as my understanding is that that's not what a late-term abortion is. A late-term abortion is in the third trimester, and it is, I think that varies by state as to how late you can perform them. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes.
But that's my understanding. And often the later that they're performed, it is because of the life of the mother. It would actually be, you know, it would, well, she could die during childbirth.
Right. Or there is a condition within the, call it a fetus, baby, whatever. I know that the terminology
it's very tough to figure out what to call it because right. of the fact that if somebody's like, well, life begins at conception, then to them it's the baby from that point on.
And in the late term, what is usually the reason for a woman to abort is that the life inside her has a condition that is incompatible with life, meaning that it will die upon birth or shortly thereafter. And so the woman is being spared some of the pain of having to wait out the period of time where she is carrying this being that is incompatible with life, and then therefore having to go through birth in the normal sense that we would think of. Instead, this allows her to, you know, proactively, you know, decide how and to have a medical procedure that is going to make it as comfortable as possible for her.
I may have inarticulately summarized it, but Scott, you're familiar with what I'm talking about. President Trump has said things like this. And I don't know, I guess we live in an age where those sort of things will get challenged by people who already rail against the president. But it seems to have been something that it seems to be something that is widely just sort of believed because he put it out there, you know, that there is this practice.
Is that real? That's for real? It is widely believed because he said it?
You know, widely, in certain circles.
Well, people that are going to believe.
People who are inclined to believe him.
Because he says it.
And because they are certainly ardent, we'll just say pro-life because that's who they are. They're inclined to believe it and they hear it and like, well, see, this just proves our point.
Right.
And, you know, descriptions of abortion procedures, just, you know, gruesome things like that happen that feed into that.
You know what's really gruesome? Has anybody been there when somebody's like shot and they've got bullets in them and doctors have to go in, dive in?
Well, that's what, the whole thing is that they should do the same thing when you have to buy a gun. It's like you have to go through the whole process, the waiting period, and walk through people chanting at you saying, you know, you're a murderer.
Go into emergency rooms and seeing shot people. And I mean, the parallels are just undeniable. And I wish there could be a cohesive policy that would address both. I'm going to come up with something because I think that there has to be something sensible that this one policy could be the basis from which you have your gun rights and your abortion rights. I don't want to take us off track.
I wanted to, we sort of posed a question to Scott that we didn't really let him respond to. Do you feel like, again, it's why are things like that not being challenged to the level that maybe some people who certainly question the accuracy of one of the parts of the term that I was able to look up while we were talking is President Trump referred to executing babies, which is exactly what you're going to say to people who are, you know, going to get caught up. And, you know, look, I mean, if what he says is true and babies are being executed, I think you would have, you know, 0% of people who are like, well, that's going to be okay.
We're no longer talking about abortion.
Right. That's what I mean. That's a completely different.
Well, yes. I mean, it just goes back to this post-factual era where it started with social media and people are influenced and people don't vet what they're seeing on social media, which, you know, Trump has been able to go right into that game of like social media and being able to say whatever he wants. And everyone already knows that he's a liar, but when you say so many things every single day that you don't know when it's truthful or when it's not, you'll have that core 25% of people that are going to believe him regardless and think he's right. And like you were saying, Chelsea, they're so pro-life that...
Pro-life.
Yes, that he's gonna say something and you're going to be like, sure, absolutely. Because of course those Democrats are for, you know, killing babies because, you know... They support abortions and they want everyone to use it as birth control. You know, like you could just go on and on and on. So, of course, when he says that, because we're in this post-factual era, no one's going to ever question it as far as that core group of people. Of course, you have people and on Republicans and especially Republican women that are very much going to be questioning this and also these bans. And as I mentioned earlier, it may affect some of these closer elections next year besides, you know, the courts, which I don't think – any of them are going to agree to some of these crazy ones like Alabama. It's just too far. When Pat Robertson says it's gone too far,
are you saying that in a hypothetical or has he said
no, it's he gone said too far? That. So okay. When he says it's gone too far, you know it's gone too far.
And this is a man who sells food buckets for the end of the world. You know, I mean, this is, you know, he's having you plan for the apocalypse. What were you going to say?
And even Trump tweeted that he is, you know, against abortion except in the cases of rape and incest. So he tacitly said that he thinks that these laws have gone too far.
And the majority of Republicans, even by claiming that they're pro-life, that they're on that side of it, they're all going to pretty much say except in the cases of rape and incest. Right. And you have a lot of even conservative Republican women lawmakers that, you know, and that's part of the other thing too that's come out, and I've been reading articles about that, about some of these lawmakers that have now come forth and talked about when they were raped and the things that they went through and having this vulnerability. And a lot of them were Republican female lawmakers, and they said the same thing, like, you know, rape and incest should obviously be included in that, even if they are pro-life. I just don't see some of these extreme bans ever seeing the light of day. And in fact, I think it could backfire spectacularly on some of these states, if it gets to the Supreme Court.
So I was able to find it. It was from last month in Green Bay, Wisconsin, at a rally. President Trump described, this is a quote, the baby is born, mm-hmm. the mother meets with the doctor, they take care of the baby, they wrap the baby beautifully, and then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby. Now, the most, like, what he's describing is there are times where a late-term abortion has been unsuccessful and a baby is born. And this is a very small number that has happened. But at the point that a baby is born, it is wrapped in a blanket. This is sort of the explanation that I'm getting very quickly while we're talking. And they do treat it like any other patient at that point. But I think that the way that – look, he knows exactly what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And – I'm not going to allege anything, but, do I think that perhaps President Trump has ever in his life written a check that was not a donation to Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. but went to Planned Parenthood? Let's just put it that way.
Right.
I find it hard to believe that never happened.
And I said that on Twitter, too. It's like it's so hypocritical.
Yeah. And,
especially with quite a few, I'm sure, some of these Republican men who voted themselves in Alabama have probably...
Watch women start coming out of the woodwork. It happened to somebody not that long ago.
Not that long ago. It was actually somebody who made his mistress go and get an abortion because he got his mistress pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that came out. I don't remember exactly who that was, but I do remember that story.
Yes, but I mean, we'll see more of those because that's the thing that's so hypocritical about the whole thing.
Obviously, this is this is such a very complex issue, and it's very divisive. It comes down to, you know, where an individual feels their belief supersedes that of, you know, another person. Like, obviously, a woman deciding to get an abortion, yes, there are some that it's just like, oh yeah, I have to, you know, do that because I got pregnant by somebody I didn't want to. But for many, I'm sure it's a very difficult decision. I can't even imagine having to make that decision. And I think it's treated as though it's being done very casually and frivolously. But at the end of the day, it's the approach that seems to have always made sense for me is, well, I mean, I can have an opinion on it, but I know no matter what I do in my life, I will never have to have an abortion performed on me. So why does my opinion get to matter? I mean, I've heard people say, like, well, only let like female lawmakers vote on it. And then, of course, you have the governor of Alabama who was happy to sign it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's there are sort of all of these hypotheticals. You have people who feel that, they feel it's wrong. And I think part of being pro-choice is choosing, why I'm going to still have this baby despite this situation or because of my beliefs. I think that you sometimes get those pockets of pro-choice people who are angry if anybody's like, hey, I just believe for me that I would still have the baby, and I just mean sort of in the sense of like when you see these debates on cable news when people are yelling at each other. I don't that's what I'm talking about. So any individual can feel, anybody in the chat right now watching the archive version, you can feel however you want about any of this. I just think we're trying to reflect that it is a complicated issue, and there are a lot of people in the country who feel, either side of this. But I think bringing this failed law in front, it's not failed, but bringing a flawed law.
Flawed unconstitutional law.
Yeah, just flawed unconstitutional law, not having the exceptions that you usually expect to be associated with it. One that makes allowances for rape, incest, life of the mother, that could very well get upheld by a Supreme Court, possibly even this one. But I think once you include that, I don't understand what that is, that it's even in there. So
a play to the base.
Yeah.
See, look how we tried
look,
to do
look
it.
How hard, well, that's the other thing, that it's like, do you not want it, that you want it to...
It almost looks like they don't really mean it. They just want to be able to say
they did it. And but
they
look,
brought
we tried.
The world's strongest or the country's
right.
most
so,
rigid
So vote
laws.
For us because we are, all about pro-life and protecting babies.
Except they, when Georgia went so far as to say that if you conspire to leave the state to go to another state to have one, that is going to be a felony.
Like, never in a million years will you ever be able to hold that up.
To stop interstate travel, you're going to start restricting. That goes back to the fundamental part of what it means to be the United States of America.
Well, also what it means to be a free person. Because now you're basically saying you're a ward of the state and you're not allowed to leave if you have residency here to do something that you feel you need to do in another state. And all of it is absolutely ridiculous. And I hate that it's even an issue because to me, it's not complicated. Yeah. If you don't want to have an abortion, you don't have an abortion. What somebody else chooses to do is their business, and it goes back to any of these social issues. There's a separation of church and state for a reason. You can believe what you want. No one's forcing you to go and have an abortion. No one's forcing you to get married to somebody of the same sex. No one's forcing – it's like this stuff is absolutely ridiculous, and the fact that we are still 45 years later rehashing the same arguments is asinine because it's not complicated. You do your thing.
Yeah.
And let other people do their own thing.
I am with you. And
it's as simple as that.
And I would agree 99%. I do believe that there's a limit to all rights, including the, the right to bear arms.
Yes. But that's what I'm saying. There's definitely, but what I'm saying is when it comes to certain things that we as a country and citizens turn into issues, don't need to be.
Right.
When it comes to abortion, when it comes to gay marriage, when it comes to these social issues.
Imagine interstate travel. Imagine that, if you, that Nebraska says, we don't like gambling. Mm-hmm. So if you plan to go to Vegas to gamble, you're going to be guilty of a felony.
You're going to seize your winnings.
Right. You can't take your money back. Yeah.
That is amazing.
It does go down a slippery slope of where do you stop with certain things and what states are going to have what rules. And again, overturning Roe v. Wade and making it back to a state thing never works. And we saw that with marriage equality. We see even with marijuana laws, things like that, it should just be federal.
If enough people in the country feel like they want marijuana to be illegal, then there needs to be something that says that that's the case for all 50 states. When you're picking and choosing sort of laws like this, I think at this point, what feds can still kick in the door for any marijuana dispensary should they choose to. It's just that's not what's happened yet. This is obviously a very complicated, divisive issue. We will certainly talk more about in the weeks ahead. I did want to spend our final few minutes, because we did spend most of the show on this, talking about a few other things, some lighter things. One involves Vice President Mike Pence. He gave the commencement address at a Christian university called Taylor University. And let's not play it up to be more than it was. Dozens of students, it wasn't like hundreds of students, mm-hmm. but dozens of students walked out of the graduation ceremony in protest of Mike Pence. It being a Christian university is something that surprised me. I guess that that's their way to turn the other cheek, is to just walk out. And it's apparently it was a very coordinated, like they cleared it with the school. It's like, well, after this hymn, you can all get up and walk out. And then come on back in after the second hymn. And then there were people who walked on the stage. He shook people's hands when they graduated. Some chose not to shake his hand. That's within your right. The only reason I find the story interesting is because it's a Christian university. And I'll ask you first, Scott, what do you think it is about Mike Pence that Christians are like, yeah, I know we go to a Christian university. And look, my college was a Catholic university, but I'm not Catholic. So you might go to a Christian university right. and not no. actually be, you know, born again or right. you know, fundamental in any way. But what do you think this does this say anything to you, or is it just, oh, these like, say, 20, 30 kids are an exception?
I think there's two things. One is, yes, not everyone's going to subscribe to the same type of evangelical Christianity that Mike Pence does, even if they are Christian. So that's one. But I also think, like, kind of with Pete Buttigieg, you see that being – you can be religious and also be progressive. And I think that's something that Democrats in general have to be able to take that back and be able to say, yes, you can very easily be religious and still have progressive ideals and beliefs, which in a lot of ways is very Christian when you think about it, like taking mm-hmm. care of immigrants, taking care of others, you know, as a collective society, not what the current present day Republicans embrace. So I think there's that. And I think there are some Christians that also think, you know, he's too extreme. So they're not supportive of him. You know, I joke a lot on Twitter and call him fake Christian. But I do think, you know, when you start telling other people, and it goes back to, again, abortion bans and other things, when you start telling people what to do when there's a separation of church and state, at the end of the day, you're going to lose that battle, because there is a separation, and religion is to some degree supposed to be a private endeavor. And so I think that there's two sides to it with that.
Just quickly, Chelsea, before we get one last topic in there, what did you think about the fact that this happened for Mike Pence?
Cool. That's all I thought. Yeah. I was like, thought. Cool. Yay for those kids for standing
I
up.
I wanted to, exactly. It's obviously a bigger story, but in the chat, let's see, Craze Shays X says, is a war actually going to happen between the U.S. and Iran? Because I live in Kuwait and I'm worried. So in our basically 2 minutes, let me ask you first, Chelsea, how likely do you think an actual war with Iran is? And I'm not talking about, well, you know, just showboating.
A declared war by Congress, as, mm-hmm. you know, it's proscribed in the Constitution that it's yeah. supposed to be, I would say 0%. Trump taking it upon himself to do something illegal and unconstitutional, even though right now the word is that he's trying not to escalate problems with Iran and go to war. I think that that's, I don't believe that. I believe that he's just saying it and that he does intend to escalate the conflict. I don't know, to all out war to that degree, but I believe he plans to escalate it as a political move.
Well, when asked if there was going to be a war with Iran, he said, I hope not. So pretty sure he could make sure that happens. You know, just saying hope not is like, well, if you really hope not, then don't do it. What do you think, Scott? Do you think that there will be – let me put it a little differently than I did with Chelsea. How will you characterize your expectation of what action will be taken against Iran? Will it be war? Will it be something else?
I think if anything, it would be more strategic, you know, drone type strikes or things like that, because I don't believe that even Republicans are going to feel the need of being dragged into another war unless, you know, Trump tries to do this wag the dog thing, because things are getting very extreme. I just do not see any sense that it's good for anybody, let alone putting our men and women in danger to begin with for something that's not necessary. But even from the optics of it, of being in these forever wars and thinking that it's going to be a good move for for him at all is beyond me of how that's going to help at all.
Unfortunately, he also knows that war tends to galvanize the country in support of the president. And he even tweeted himself that Obama was going to start a war with Iran in order to get elected.
No, I wouldn't hold anything past him. I think we're in a different time where people are a lot more aware of what's going on. And unless there's a drastic reason why we're doing that, that the majority of the country is not going to be behind him. And it's not going to be, again, like these abortion laws, it's not going to work in his favor. Because people do not want to be sending people into war for ridiculous reasons. And like you said, with Congress, 0% that they're going to authorize a war. It's not going
to
happen.
Well, I think that's one of many stories that we need to keep our eyes on in the weeks ahead. And of course, another will be impossible movement on the impeachment clock.
See my impeachment clock? I told you when the Mueller report came out, I said you never unplugged the impeachment clock. But when the Mueller report came back out again, once we saw after the bar, even with the bar summary, I was like, we don't know yet. I said the clock's probably going to start again because there's too many things, and now we see
all this obstruction.
All
obstruction
this
2.0.
Happening in broad daylight. So, I think it's back on the table again.
We will talk. Yeah, exactly. We will talk all about that next week, when we will be here at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern. But until then, Chelsea, where do people find you?
At Chelsea Galicia.
And Scott.
And you can find me at SMan80.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And tonight at 9 Pacific on the Chernobyl After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. It's an HBO miniseries that's the opposite of fun, but really well made. So check out that show and our after show. But until next Tuesday, have a good one.
Bye.
Founder Kevin Undergaro and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.